Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. Sorry that I'm on a telephone, but I'm on location filming. And hopefully we'll be able to switch over to a portable microphone shortly. Just looking to get it hooked up. Today we have so much to share with you, including how Big Pharma wants to protect the elderly from the dangers of coconut oil and natural substances. And that's from Brian Shohavy of Health Impact News Editor. Then we're going to also look at some very positive information that can make a difference, and that is for men who want to have better reproductive health, give up the sausages. Sleep loss causes brain vulnerability to toxic elements. For women with a positive IGF-1 receptor, that means you are then considered susceptible for the breast cancer. By limiting carbohydrates, you could reduce the breast cancer reoccurrence. And this is from the Giselle School of Medicine at Dartmouth College, which means that you don't have to allow your genetic predisposition to determine cutting off your breast, as Angelina Jolie and hundreds of thousands of other women have done. Also, we'll even show how eating certain foods starve cancer, an anti-cancer diet today. And herbs show gastro benefits, and how red meat consumption increases breast cancer risk, and that's a big one as well. And then five foods that you can plant. They're perennials. You plant them once and enjoy them forever. So we have a lot to share on that topic. Then we're going to talk about the environment with probably the foremost expert telling us the truth, Professor Emeritus of Environmental Sciences from Arizona State University, Professor Guy McPherson. So as you see, we have a lot to share. Plus, from our public health segment, the CDC's vaccine safety research has been exposed as a fraud, flawed, and falsified in peer-reviewed scientific journal. And this is from Watch Chung, and all of the sustainable scientific evidence exists that vaccine ingredients are neurodevelopmental neurotoxins. So that'll be interesting. And also one of the leading advocates for vaccination in the world, one of the most respected advocates, who has a very high position. He's a professor of medicine. He's the founder of the Mayo Clinic's Vaccine Research Group. He's one of the world's leading vaccine advocates. He's editor-in-chief of the peer-reviewed scientific journal Vaccine. He's a recipient of awards. He chairs vaccine data monitoring committees for pharmaceutical companies like Merck. He holds patents on various vaccine processes. So what did he just write? I don't believe it. That the measles vaccine cannot prevent outbreaks of measles? Well, this is interesting, from Lauren Solomon from GreenMed Info. So it's interesting what we've been saying all along, and so the more they attack those parents and scientists and activists and journalists for telling the truth about vaccines, the more we share the truth with you. Let's begin. As we know, we have tens of millions of Americans who are concerned about losing their memory or suffering from some mental condition that could very easily be putting them into a psychiatric diagnosis. And almost universally, these individuals are given some form of psychiatric drug. Now, if you ask, where is the scientific evidence that being in a nursing home or being short of memory, it makes you psychotic, you'll say, well, there is none. There is no such thing. It doesn't exist. You are correct. then why is it that the vast majority of drugs given are antipsychotic to seniors and veterans? And what happens when you give an antipsychotic drug to a veteran? Frequently, you increase their suicide rate and their homicide rate and violent rates. In fact, 22 veterans kill themselves every single day. Obviously, our pharma-based mental health system is a complete, total, unmitigated disaster. So many people are looking for natural and more safe alternatives for depression, anxiety, any form of trauma they've gone through. Well, here is the latest. There's now a report that is going to be appearing called, from current psychiatric reports, called Natural Products and Supplements for Geriatric Depression and Cognitive Disorders and Evaluation of the Research. It's absurd because, unfortunately, and because it's all pro-psychiatry and pro-pharma, they don't want you taking anything that's natural. But what do we have? In the actual independent scientific literature, we have proof that the omega-3 fatty acids, ginkgo biloba, SAMe, St. John's wort, the B vitamins, piperazine, coconut oil, all have benefits. Now, their drugs kill about 200,000 people per year. A lot of them are suicides and secondary deaths, but also you don't find any of this, zero, from the natural products. So here's their contention. This is what I call the Janet Reno way of saving the children in the village at Waco. In order to save the children, and it was completely reasonable from her and Bill Clinton, Hillary Clinton's position, you first have to kill all the children. But because you killed all the children with a good intent, you wanted to free them, then everything is fine. You'll suffer no consequences. Okay. Doesn't make any sense, does it? But that's exactly what happened. They didn't have to kill anyone. They chose to, but they're never held accountable. It's always washed clean. So when they say there is, quote, no science to support health claims of natural products for, like coconut oil, wow, maybe they've never used a computer. Maybe they don't know how to Google scientific literature. There are plenty of scientific studies regarding coconut oil, the high-fat ketogenic diet, and natural supplements. It is true that rigorous and costly studies by drug companies to create a special patent, those aren't done, but those are not needed. We have plenty of studies showing that coconut oil has been nourishing billions of people around the world for thousands of years. And coconut oil is not dangerous like other drugs by the FDA. In fact, nobody is dying from the toxic side effects of natural foods and supplements. But over 100,000 to 200,000 minimally are dying each year from prescription drugs. So the next time they tell you, if you're a senior citizen and you're in a nursing home, or if you have a parent in a nursing home, a relative, and we have them on drugs, what kind of drugs do you have them on and why? Well, antipsychotic. Show me the proof that they're psychotic. All these people are on psychotics, antipsychotics. Why? None of them are psychotic. So everything you could do wrong to the human brain, the human body, psychiatry is doing. This is a profession that is a fraud. There are individuals who understand that within the field, and they're using non-pharmaceutical approaches. But the rest, no. Stay as far away as you can. Now, for men, better stay away from sausages if you want to have a healthy baby. Quote, this is the background. The United States, anabolic sex steroids are administered to cattle for growth promotion. There's concern regarding the reproductive consequences of this practice in men who eat beef. We investigated whether meat consumption was associated with semen quality parameters and reproductive hormone levels in men. And the results, there was an inverse relationship between processed red meat intake and total sperm count, meaning the more red meat you consume, the lower the sperm count, which meant that the greater likelihood of not having a conception. So clean up your diet if you want to have a healthy child. a lot of people are having trouble sleeping, and understandably so, with all this going on in a lot of people's lives. According to the Metropolitan Autonomous University, sleep loss causes brain vulnerability to toxic chemicals. And they couldn't understand why so many people become so immune destroyed when they're not getting sleep. And they found out it's because of neuron function and neuron death. And anytime you take in a monosodium glutamate or processed foods, you can and will damage neurons. And then when you don't get enough sleep, then you don't get the rehabilitation. And then you take in a soft drink or an artificial sweetener or high fructose corn syrup, you create excitotoxicity. And that further destroys the brain and makes the brain extremely susceptible to toxic elements. Quote from the study, although manufacturers of antibiotic drugs or second-generation antihistamines ensure that these do not affect brain function, there is evidence that these may impact on the central nervous system when there is an increase in the permeability of the blood-brain barrier. So what this means in lay language is this. When we are eating the average American diet and consuming alcohol and processed foods and packaged foods and french fries and pizzas, we are flooding the body, the blood, and getting through into the brain with pro-inflammatory agents. That overexcites the neurons. In fact, it excites them to death. So, on the one hand, you may feel relaxed after you have some alcohol, but you've just, in effect, electrocuted a cell. And so no matter how you socially, intellectually justify it, you're still killing millions of cells. So one day you wake up and you just don't have the memory, or you're more susceptible to other conditions because you've damaged your blood-brain barrier and you've damaged your brain. One more reason that a clean, healthy diet also helps your brain. If this audience remembers when Happy Rockefeller, Governor Rockefeller's wife, was going to get a double mastectomy, even though she had no reason to, but she was testing positive for the genes that they claimed would cause breast cancer, I said at the time that lifestyle has an enormous amount of evidence to support that if you change to a healthy lifestyle, there's no reason that that gene, even if it did express itself 100% accurately, and no gene has ever been shown to do that for cancer or any other disease, that you could mitigate it. Instead, she chose to be the poster person for the remove your breast and save your life. Now, it's rather stupid when you consider, in fact, it's beyond stupid. It's lunacy, total, complete lunacy. And here's how stupid your doctor is. And here's how, not just stupid your doctor is, but how gravely stupid they are. Do you assume that a cancer-causing agent in any part of the body cannot migrate to another part? So let's say it's not your genes, but it's something you're doing, like smoking. So are you going to remove your lungs or drinking alcohol? Are you going to remove your liver and kidneys? That's how it works. Anytime you take in any chemical that can cause destruction to a DNA, it can cause it in every cell of the body. It's just not all manifest in the same way. Some areas are more vulnerable than others. So what this means is this, that for women with positive IGF-1 receptor, according to this new study from the Gazelle School of Medicine, Dartmouth College, reducing carbohydrate intake could reduce the risk of breast cancer reoccurrence among women whose tumor tissue is positive for IGF-1 receptor. And the article was published in the peer-reviewed journal Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention. Quote, there is a growing body of research demonstrating association between obesity, diabetes, and cancer risk. Yeah. Wow. Time and again, we've seen people who have extremely vulnerable susceptibilities, and we're able to turn them around. But why isn't that sinking in anywhere in medicine? Because we don't do comprehensive analysis. We do single analysis. Let's see if vitamin C works at reducing blood pressure. Okay. Why don't you also at the same time measure whether or not vitamin C reduces intraocular eye pressure? Why don't you see if vitamin C reduces free radical oxidation, oxidative stress? Why don't you see if vitamin C increases T4 and T8 cells in people with HIV? Why don't you see if... No, that's just too confusing. Why is it confusing? Because if vitamin C does something good, if you find out that vitamin C prevents colorectal cancer in a certain dose, then why would you stop at that? Why wouldn't you then look at other cancers in the body? Couldn't we assume that if it helps with one cancer, it should help with all cancers, since all cancers have commonalities and inflammatory DNA destructive processes? Yes, if you have common sense. Now, can certain foods starve cancer? Of course they can. Let me share you with the truth that we have you will not find in medicine or science, because they refuse to accept that anything other than a drug, because that's what they've been told is their only truth. That's also monotheistic belief. If the only way you can approach a problem, and that's any problem, is by excessive use of the existing paradigm, then that's all you're going to use. And when you don't get the outcome you want, just do more of it. Like the war on terrorism. That's a good example. So why not look at other venues? Why not try other approaches? Since virtually everything we've tried thus far has failed, there's little doubt that a healthy diet can help reduce your risk of cancer. But you know that certain foods can assist in the annihilation of existing cancer cells as well, helping your body to fight off the potentially fatal disease. Now, these foods encourage something called angiogenesis, and that holds the key to the anti-cancer way of eating. Now, angiogenesis is the process of new blood vessels forming from existing vessels. Generally, it's a good thing. But in the case of tumors, angiogenesis is negative. It feeds the cancer, gives it a blood supply, and advances it. As the American Cancer Society reports, the whole class of drugs addresses this, known as angiogenesis inhibitors. They're designed to stop the formation of these tumor-feeding vessels and slow the growth of cancerous tumors. But you end up with all kinds of side effects. But what about natural ways of feeding an anti-angiogenesis foods? Here's the list. If you want to prevent cancer, green tea, an organic, grapes, kale, all berries, citrus, turmeric, parsley, olive, and grapeseed oils, dark chocolate, garlic, lavender, apples, and those are all powerful. They do a phenomenal job. So we should be using those. But then there's some herbs, or at least an herb, that really shows benefits within our gastrointestinal tract. And it is called Benegut, B-E-N-E-G-U-T. And it's a leaf. It's from the Perilla, P-E-R-I-L-L-A, fruticans leaf, and it relieves gastrointestinal discomfort. And, quote, Perilla extract showed consistently higher reduction in gastrointestinal symptoms compared to the placebo. So that was in the British Medical Journal. Also, could red meat consumption increase breast cancer risk? Now, this is from Mainstream Medicine's Medical News Today, published in the British Medical Journal. Quote, there are many known risk factors that can increase the likelihood of developing breast cancer, including gender, age, family history, obesity, alcohol consumption. Now a study published has found that higher red meat intake during early childhood could well be one of these risk factors. There's two types of breast cancer, non-invasive breast cancer, which remains in situ, within the breast tissue and invasive breast cancer, which spreads to other parts of the body. Breast cancer is the most common invasive cancer among women worldwide. And this study showed the difference. And yes, it was. It was based on how much red meat that a person's eating. They studied 80,000 premenopausal women in the Nurses Health Study for, about 30 years. And those that had the most red meat had a 22% increased risk of breast cancer. So how do we reverse that? First and foremost, get rid of all red meat and processed meat in your diet. Get rid of poultry. Instead, have beans, legumes, nuts, and seeds, vegetables, fruits. And also, there's five vegetables that you can grow every year. They're perennials. Plant them once. And then each winter they disappear. But then you see them again coming up, sprouting in the spring. Globe artichoke. The edible flower buds, they're in the thistle family. They're good. Asparagus, Jerusalem artichoke, called sunchokes, the allium family, garlic, onions, chives, and radicchio, R-A-D-I-C-C-H-I-O, and chicory. And they are terrific. That's the latest on health and nutrition. Now let's go over and take a look at the latest on the environment. I have a lot to share today on the environment and some on public health. First, let's go to the public health segment, because we're trying to be the forum in all of media for honest, objective information on the science of safety and efficacy of vaccines. Now, this is from the top vaccine scientists probably in the world. And this is from Green Med Info, from Lawrence Solomon. This is from Dr. Gregory Polin. He is one of the world's most admired and most advanced thinkers in the field of vaccinology. And what he found was that, quote, the measles vaccine has failed. And he wrote a paper called The Reemergence of Measles in Developed Countries. And in that paper, he warned that due to factors that most haven't noticed, measles has come back to be a serious public health threat. And thankfully for all of us, in that paper and elsewhere, he also spelled out in no-nonsense fashion what now needs to be done. Now, mind you, he is not a vaccine denier. He is a vaccine scientist. He has got patents. He's the head of the professor of medicine, founder and leader of the Mayo Clinic's Vaccine Research Group, one of the world's largest vaccine research organizations. He's on a committee with pharmaceutical giant Merck. But at least he had the integrity to say when something didn't work, it didn't work. Quote from him, outbreaks are occurring even in highly developed countries where vaccine access, public health infrastructure, and health literacy are not significant issues. This is unexpected and a worrisome harbinger. Measles outbreaks are occurring where they are least expected. A surprising number of cases occurring in people who previously see one or two documented doses of vaccine containing measles-containing vaccine, end quote. Well, he says that from 1989-91, we had 20% to 40%, now, quote, over 50% of the 98 individuals that had received two doses of measles vaccine got measles. Okay, why is this important? But no one in the media picked up on it at all. Here's why it's important. Because there are many scientists who are saying, take a look at what's in the vaccines. Mercury, polysorbate 80, DNA, foreign DNA, contaminants, that all these are in there, and that is not a good thing. We also know that aluminum is, by at least 80 different studies, a neurotoxin. And this is from the toxicological data. And I've interviewed leading toxicologists who said they would never allow the amount of aluminum that's in a vaccine into their body. And yet, this is what we're putting in these measles vaccines. so, if a vaccine did no harm at all, then you could say, okay, so it's a, you know, it's harmless. Fine, it's harmless. But we are seeing children get a vaccine, the measles vaccine, especially when it's the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, MMR, and who have devastating effects and neurological effects and autism spectrum effects. So it's extremely dangerous, but it doesn't work. But think of the certainty by which pharmacists, physicians, public health advocates, journalists excoriated anyone or any parent who said, why are you not vaccinating your kid? Your kid then represents, if they're not vaccinated, a danger to those other children. Well, first off, if my kid had been vaccinated completely with all their vaccines, my kid should be protected. And if a kid's not vaccinated, that kid doesn't represent it. The whole purpose of vaccinating is to protect them. So it would be just this. The kid that is not vaccinated would be the one that would be put at risk from someone who is also not vaccinated, spreading a contagion. They've got their science upside down. It's one of these situations where a completely failed paradigm, a completely unorthodox and a completely radicalized, stupid approach to public health wins the day. But at least they've acknowledged it. Now, if they acknowledge now that the AIDS vaccine, the HIV vaccine, actually increased the risk of that, gave people HIV infections and hence AIDS, and now these people who were in this trial have to be on these retroviral drugs, which can speed up their death, they acknowledge that. Now they acknowledge this vaccine doesn't work. What about all the other vaccines, that, like the polio vaccine, that doesn't work? So we're not going to give up on this. We're going to keep pounding home the idea that for every time they say, oh, yeah, you know, such and such, we're going to show you no. Also from our public health segment today, the CDC's vaccine safety research is exposed as flawed and falsified in peer-reviewed scientific journals. Quote, substantial scientific evidence exists that vaccine ingredient is a developmental neurotoxin. Quote, just months after U.S. Congressman Bill Posey compared the CDC's vaccine safety studies to the SEC's Bernie Madoff scandal, malfeasance in the CDC studies of thimerosal-containing vaccines has, for the first time, been documented in peer-reviewed scientific literature. While the CDC states on its website that, quote, low doses of thimerosal vaccines do not cause harm, and are only associated with minor local injection site reactions, like redness and swelling at the injection site, end quote, the journal Biomed Research International now provides direct evidence that the CDC safety assurances about the mercury-containing preservative are in fact not factual. And according to the article's lead author, Dr. Brian Hooker, the paper opens by citing over 165 studies that have found thimerosal or mercury in vaccines to be harmful, including 16 studies that have reported outcomes in human infants and children, including death and poisoning, allergic reactions, malformations, autoimmune reactions, and Wells syndrome, developmental delay, neurodevelopmental disorders, including tics, speech delay, language delay, ADHD, and autism. These findings, by multiple independent research groups over the past 75-plus years, have consistently found thimerosal to be harmful. Quote, substantial scientific evidence exists and has existed for many years that the vaccine ingredient thimerosal, meaning mercury, is a developmental neurotoxin. And that is from Dr. George Lucier, former associate director of the National Toxicology Program. Studies showing harm from thimerosal sharply contradict published outcomes of six CDC co-authored and sponsored papers, the very studies that CDC relies upon to declare that thimerosal is safe for use in infant and maternal vaccines. Dr. Hooker, biochemist and vaccine industry watchdog, said the six CDC studies, quote, each of these papers is fatally flawed from a statistics standpoint, and several of the papers represent issues of scientific malfeasance. For example, important data showing a relationship between thimerosal exposure and autism are withheld from three of the publications. This type of cherry-picking of data by the CDC in order to change the results of important research studies to support flawed and dangerous vaccination policy should not be tolerated, end quote. Dr. Boyd Haley, international expert in mercury toxicity and co-author of the recently published paper, said, quote, there is no doubt that authorities in the CDC have initiated and participated in a cover-up of vaccine-induced damage from thousands in our children, and I consider this criminal. The paper entitled Methodological Issues and Evidence of Malfeasance and Research Purporting to Show Thimerosal and Vaccines is Safe was published last week, and it contains 8 pages of evidence that the CDC has had knowledge of the vaccine preservative's neurological risks, yet it continues to cover them up. The paper concludes, quote, 5 of the publications examined in this review were directly commissioned by the CDC, raising the possible issue of conflict of interest or research bias, since vaccine promotion is a central mission of the CDC. Conceivably, if serious neurological disorders are found to be related to thimerosal in vaccines, such findings could possibly be viewed as damaging to the vaccine program. Dr. Hooker had submitted over 100 Freedom of Information Act requests to the CDC over the last 10 years and has amassed thousands of pages of documents showing malfeasance in the CDC's vaccine safety program. Dr. Hooker revealed that one CDC document quoted a top official instructing CDC employees to, quote, review all correspondence and documents to see if there is any foreseeable harm to the agency if they are released, end quote, so that those documents could be redacted by the CDC's attorney. I'm Gary Nall. Let's shift gears now. Unfortunately, I do not have any of my material since I'm on the road and not at a computer, but I will ask my engineer if my guest is standing by, Professor Guy McPherson.
I'm standing by.
Hi, thank you for being with us today.
Thanks for having me on.
I'm going to give you one important question, and I know how in-depth you like to go, and we're all going to learn from it. We've been told that, yes, we have some problems with the environment, but nothing that would require our government, and especially the, you know, we never anticipate the Republicans do anything that represents the right choice as far as a populist decision. But so many Democrats and liberals, corporate ones, actually believe that the people they elected from the president to Congress and Senate actually care about them and will do something, or put their reputation on the line, or stand in protest or solidarity. And rare is that the occasion. So they've been told also, don't worry about the environment. We have a committee working on it. And don't worry about global warming. It's coming, but it's not really that bad. Don't worry about these 125,000 unusual world events, weather events we had in the last 12 months. They're anomalies. And don't worry about the ice melting, the oceans rising, excessive drought or rain. Those are not that unusual. And we're certainly not going to ask a single industry to change any of its ways or people's lifestyles to adapt to anything. Let's just do more studies and leave it to us. We're the best and brightest. We're from Harvard and Yale. And go back to watching the Kardashians. That's the message that we get. You have a different approach. You don't knock on a door. You kick the damn door open. And you walk in and you say, like what I'm about to say or not, you're going to hear a truth that's going to wake you up. Share us that truth now, please.
Yes, I think the scientists, the academic scientists in the civilized world have been reluctant, I'll say, to point out how bad the situation really is. We've known for a long time, as pointed out in the journal Global Environmental Change in February 2013, scientists, quote, err on the side of least drama. Well, of course they do, because if they actually spoke the kinds of things I speak, I don't think they would be comfortable in their positions anymore. They might not even have those positions anymore, but in any case, they certainly wouldn't be comfortable in them. So I think, you know, I was on with you in April, mid-April, and a week after we did that appearance, Truthout correctly headlined their assessment. So this is the headline at Truthout on April 22nd. Intergovernmental Climate Report Leaves Hopes Hanging on Fantasy Technology. That's right. The Intergovernmental Panel invokes geoengineering, which is a fantasy technology. And they don't suggest a way to geoengineer. And subsequently, several people have come out pointing out the absurdity of geoengineering, that not only is it unlikely to make things better, it's probably going to make things worse. 2 days after Truthout's headline comes a headline on Time magazine, quote, NASA chief, humanity's future depends on mission to Mars. And he specifically points to 2030 as the year we must colonize Mars, or we're not going to have habitat for us in this solar system. So things are dire. There's an increasing amount of evidence indicating that things are dire. And most of the climate scientists, and certainly all the politicians I know, are downplaying how catastrophic the information really is.
Tell us, from your perspective, what you realistically see happening in the very near future. Let's see in the next 5 years.
Well, it's difficult for me to imagine this set of living arrangements being held up for the next 5 years. I think, you know, Dmitry Orlov, who wrote Reinventing Collapse, the Soviet Experience and American Prospects, has never issued a forecast involving timing until about 2 months ago, when he said the end of collapse is near. And he's talking about the collapse of industrial civilization, at least in the United States. John Williams, who writes at Shadow Stats, also, to my knowledge, has never given a forecast involving timing. He predicts hyperinflation beginning this year. So if that's right, if American empire falls, I can't imagine that that won't take the world's industrial economy down with it. If that's the case, then we will, according to Clive Hamilton's assessment in his 2013 book, Earth Masters, we will see a 1.1C rise in global average temperature in a matter of days, maybe weeks. So what that means is that we're at 2. The much-dreaded political target, which was never a scientific target, at least not since the United Nations Advisory Group on Greenhouse Gases put out their October 1990 report. So that takes us to 2 for global average. And we know that the interior of continents, the land masses, heat up at least twice as fast as the global average. What that means is throughout the interior of a large continent in the northern hemisphere, I suspect we'll be out of habitat for humans in a relatively short period of time because of the inability to grow food, because it's just going to skyrocket temperatures in the interior. So we're going to see the Dust Bowl that never ends.
When do you think we'll start seeing the Dust Bowl?
Sorry?
When do you believe we'll start to see the Dust Bowl?
Well, I think the Dust Bowl is underway. I think you're seeing plenty of evidence of it in places like Oklahoma and Kansas. And Haboob, which is nearly as I can tell, was a term never applied to North America until the last 5 years. Suddenly there's one reported every week or two. I think if collapse comes, if collapse is complete, rather, within the next year or two, that then we get the Dust Bowl that never ends in the interior of North America. If the set of living arrangements holds on, continues to drive to extinction 200 species a day, and all the other horrors that come with industrial civilization, then it's going to take a while longer for those events to manifest themselves. Do we have 5 years in the northern hemisphere? Do we have 10? I don't know. If we maintain the set of living arrangements. If we don't, then I suspect most of us who live in the interior anyway are going to run out of habitat in the very near future.
Now, when you say the interior, could you define that, please?
Yeah, I think anywhere that is minimally or not at all affected by marine systems. So you get 50 miles or 100 miles inland on the west coast, and you're over the coast range. And so there's not much influence from the Pacific Ocean. Similarly, in the deep south and in the east, you don't have to go very far inland before you lose or greatly minimize, at least, the influence of the ocean. And the ocean has a tremendous ameliorating impact on temperatures. And when you get very far away from that ocean, you move inland, you lose that ameliorating impact. It varies, of course, depending on what part of the world you're in and how big the mountain range is that the marine system has to go through or over. So in the coastal plain, in the south, in the deep south of the United States, the marine system has influence quite a ways in. It's very humid, quite a few hundred miles into the southern part of the United States. So it's a little hard to put a ring around it and call it interior in light of that information.
There's now water wars inside the United States, legal water wars. And recently in Texas, in one area, 10,000 families, farms and homes, ranches, have been told that their land will be flooded to make a 75,000-acre lake to feed Dallas. That's an enormous displacement of people. That would be one of the largest displacements of people in American history in modern times. And I see that happening all over the country where there is need for metropolitan areas to have water that will not have their own natural supply, don't have their own aquifer. They're planning on spending up to $7 billion, including bringing water to locations. Now, mind you, to bring water, they're only talking about 2.5 hours. Now, imagine if you were in a major city where you have a long way to go to bring water. This is going to be changing the whole landscape of people living in smaller communities. If you don't live in a big community, you're not going to get any water unless you have it already and you have wells. Could you talk about then how are people supposed to be growing food, since the majority of food growth in the United States are grown on small farms? 70% of all food grown in the United States are grown on small farms. This could wipe out an awful lot of small farmers.
This is the age-old struggle between the city and the country, between civilization and those who opt out and take responsibility for themselves instead of letting the government control pretty much every aspect of their lives. Edward Abbey wrote about it in a wonderful book called Good News. And in that novel, written in the late 1970s, I believe, the country wins. Phoenix ends up being completely smashed because people from the country went out over people from the city. And so you have these self-reliant people living in the country who, in that case, won. He was frequently asked why he called it good news, because obviously it wasn't good news. People thought he was kidding about that, and he always said, no, I'm not kidding about that. The country is going to win. He was pointing out that ultimately nature bats last, that we can't sustain industrial civilization as characterized by large cities indefinitely. So this is an age-old struggle. If the government wins, which really means the corporations that have strong influence over the government and over the media, if they win, it means that everybody gets shepherded into cities and give up their responsibility for taking care of themselves and for their neighbors. And currently, 84% of the people in this country, according to the 2010 census, live in cities already. I don't think more people living in cities is an answer to anything. Cities are the very height and definition of civilization. They extract water and clean air and food and fossil fuels from outlying areas. They're in human population overshoot at a local level. Maintaining that is maintaining insanity.
But right now, here's what happened in Canada today. This is from Common Dreams, Sarah Lazar. Low back as Canada muzzles public talk on climate change. Thousands sign petition condemning ban, an actual ban, on weather forecasters discussing global warming. And 14,000 people had signed up on a petition by Canada, a Canadian resident, because they have told people in Canada, Environmental Canada confirmed that they're investigating any journalist that discusses global warming. What does that tell you? Because we talk about things, but we don't do anything about it. Will it take a natural disaster before it finally reminds us that we have some moral and sensible responsibility to nature and ourselves? I don't see any other way that we're going to do anything in America until we actually face reality in a harsh way. Your thoughts, please.
Well, of course, I couldn't agree more. And a line from George Orwell comes to mind. In a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And so truth tellers are disparaged on a regular basis. And they're punished on a regular basis. And so that starts the current version of that, as you point out, is with Stephen Harper's government in Canada. But truth tellers have been disparaged for a long time, and not just in Canada. I learned a long time ago that appeals to authority aside, being in the minority doesn't make somebody wrong. And that's the whole story of science, in fact, dating back to the well-known story about Galileo and house arrest. And yes, being in the minority when you're a scientist doesn't make you wrong. And I would argue that at this point, the government that is the governments that are shutting down the meteorologists are the ones in the minority. But if you can keep the truth from getting out, if you can keep the people from knowing what the situation is really like, then you can continue to transfer power and money from the hands of the many to the hands of the few. And that's the point.
Well, final issue. Let's say that we continue as we always do, to do nothing, except for those who have power and control and money, to think only of their own selfish interest. And it's the average person to assume that somehow someone's going to take care of them, or should, or they're entitled, or be completely indifferent or cynical or too old to care, and they just don't care about anything. They're just lost in their own kind of mosaic of fantasies and delusions. So only a small percentage of people in the United States, probably around 5%, which is still 15 million people, still a lot of people, care. But we're not in the levers of power, and the rest of the public is simply doesn't want to know about it, actually get angry about it. So what is going to be the coming attraction as you see it? Paint it for us as realistically, as honestly. I don't care how brutal it is, and I don't care how shocking it is. Give us this final portrait of what we're about to see in the immediate future.
Well, I think in the very near future, we will see a ratcheting up of the kind of police state we've seen over the last two decades. I think Orwell and Huxley were right. I think Orwell was right in that we are in the midst of police state fascism, the merger of the corporations and the government. And I think Huxley was right in that a vast majority of the citizenry are capitulating, are willingly, gladly, in fact, giving up their what we used to call rights in exchange for cold beer in the fridge and the Kardashians on television. I think we're going to continue to see more of that. And as a consequence, we're going to continue to see police forces that look a lot like a domestic military, specifically banned by our Constitution, but willingly accepted by the people. And so people will lose all ability to protest one way or another. When will they rise up? It's difficult for me to imagine they will ever rise up. in this country. I have no idea what it's going to take. By the time we get to the position that people rise up, I fear that we're going to be in the greatest die-off in human history as a result of climate change.
Well, for some people, that's another economic opportunity for the next stage of Soylent Green.
That's right.
That's coming. Well, we are screwed. But even if we're screwed in the moment, and if we do live in a police state, we do live in a fascism state, we are controlled by two completely sociopathic parties. We have the 1% liberals on the left who have sold their soul for their position at the table. We've always had that on the right. And then the media is joining them to be their sponsors and their defenders. We have science that has sold out. We have corporatization of all of our interests. We've had privatization of all of our public goods. So if the average public thinks that somehow winning in life on the defensive by meditating and praying is going to get them an answer that's going to be positive, then they are in for a rude awakening. So maybe it's going to take some absolute ecological wake-up call. And if that's what it's going to take, I'm still not sure that that's going to be enough to separate a person from their can of beer.
I fear... Well, there's an old line, an optimist believes this is the best of all possible worlds, a pessimist fears this is true, and I fear that you're correct.
Well, but let's keep telling the truth, and let's keep offering options for people who still want to do something constructive, because we do and this audience does. And this is the largest listened-to radio program in the world for progressive, independent-minded thinking people. And by the way, just as an idea, today one of our films we were just notified is being shown, Seeds of Death. The challenge against Monsanto and GMO is being showed all over the Arab world. It's being shown on a channel in the United Arab Emirates states. So at least many tens, if not hundreds of millions of people will become aware of one more thing that we shouldn't be doing, that is eating genetic engineering. So for every movement they make in one direction to codify their strength and power and control over us, we also are able to get some words out and images that strengthen those people willing to stand up for their rights in their own country. So there are a lot of people trying to do something. It's just that we are the last place in the world that anyone would realistically expect the truth to emanate from any of our institutions today. We have betrayed the world, and I'm going to be doing a commentary of 1 hour tomorrow just on this, how pathological we are in our behavior in this country. And I am skewering every group, I believe every single institution, our religious institutions, shame on them, our political institutions, they are scum, our media institutions, our intellectual centers, our think tanks, our foundations, our medical complexes, all of these institutions that historically have been there to help people are there to use and abuse people, take advantage of them. And it's just time that we were at least aware. If you want to be a slave unwittingly, it's one thing. If you want to be it willingly, it's a different thing. If you are and you want to break free, it's something else. And I believe that they have created debt slavery. I believe they have created a sense of debt peonage. And I'll deal with that tomorrow. Final thought from you.
Well, a tiny bit of good news in The Guardian today, the British newspaper. There's an article about hug a climate scientist today.
Murdoch's obituary was in The Guardian today, the good news.
No, I'm sorry, it's not that good.
That almost got me excited there.
the cartoon about hug a climate scientist today says, right in the first line, the data says we are all going to die. And they point out that our planet's going to turn into an enormous, thrice-reheated chicken nugget, but that no one really has been listening. There you go.
That's in The Guardian today.
Yes, it is.
Wow. That's a paper that still has integrity. Thank you very much,
yes.
Guy. I appreciate being on and sharing your insights with us.
Thanks for the opportunity, Gary. I really appreciate it.
And we will do I'm going to be doing a couple in-depth shows, two-hour show specials on fascism and on the environment. Professor Guy McPherson, Professor Emeritus of Natural Resources and Ecology and Evolutionary Biology, University of Arizona, author of Walking Away from Empire, as well as Going Dark, and his website is GuyMcPherson.com. I'm Gary Knoll. Thank you all for listening. Look forward to sharing more tomorrow.